Mangoes.
Welcome to the Filipino Freethinkers podcast that's also a video. I'm Red.
I'm Pepe.
And I'm Margie.
And today we're going to talk about two things. First is the religious freedom to be a misogynist. And second is Soylent. So let's start with the first one. In one of the hearings on the RH Law SQA, it was shown that the petitioner, the Couples for Christ Foundation, opposed the RH law because it violates the freedom of religion as it gives the wife sole authority to decide on matters of reproductive health, even if the Catholic faith gives the husband authority to decide in cases of marital deadlock. So if there's an argument between the husband and the wife on whether the wife should have a pregnancy or take contraceptive pills or whatever, it's the husband who breaks the tie. And this is, of course, according to the Catholic faith that says that it's the husband who's the head of the family, the husband is like Christ, and the wife is like the church, and the church is subservient to Christ. So what do you think of this?
Well, I think, like, it's funny and a bit revealing how they say, like, hey, don't give the women the freedom to control their bodies, because they just might do that, and that's not allowed in our faith. Like, if it's not the government's job to watch over your flock, diba? Parang if you want them to act that way, like, you have to convince them that that's how their faith works. But if they want to act that way under the law, you can't block that.
So the freedom to choose, this is really what the RH bill is all about. It's all about choice. And some people are apparently complaining that their right to choose for their wives is being violated. I think we had a similar podcast discussion about something like this, where it's very convoluted, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it really says a lot about how archaic people in the justice system here in the Philippines are. Until now, there are so many people who still think that this is a valid argument, that citing your religious freedom and asserting something so chauvinistic is actually valid.
No less than a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of a similar issue back in 1997 when women's rights advocates were trying to pass the anti-rape law. And what the anti-rape law did is it made the charge of rape a charge against persons, whereas before it was a charge against chastity. And it made, you know, prosecution of those involved easier for women. But this law was about to be, it was delayed actually, because a number of legislators complained about this one provision. And what did this one provision say? That it was a provision on marital rape. So apparently, several legislators did not agree that there was such a thing as marital rape. Like, how would it be possible for a husband to rape his wife? I mean, the wife should always just give consent because she's the wife. And, like, I mean, it just goes to show that there is such a thing as religious blinders. You know, I mean, when it comes to religion, a lot of people who are experts in other things, when it comes to law or when it comes to fairness, when you put on the religious blinders, fairness just goes out the window and there becomes this double standard. You know, men are above women, Christians are above non-Christians, and so on.
It reminds me of another law, the one about adultery or concubinage, wherein if you're a man and then you cheat on your wife with someone, it's called concubinage, and it what do you call this?
Concubinage is when a man has sexual relations with someone who is not his wife in a scandalous.
Yes. Scandalous
context.
Yeah, a scandalous
or,
situation.
Yeah, or lives with her either in his current house with his wife or somewhere else.
Okay, so that's concubinage. Whereas a woman, if she just does anything sexual with somebody else, that's immediately adultery. And the punishment for concubinage is lesser than the punishment for adultery. So there's an obvious imbalance.
Double standard. Yeah. That's the Catholic double standard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I recently posted something on my wall about the good news that happened in Saudi Arabia, where they finally passed an anti-violence against women law. And I remember one commenter said, why do we have to pass a law specifically for women? Like, why can't we just pass an anti-violence law that applies equally to both men and women? And these things that we've been talking about just show that there is an inequality in society, and you have to address that with laws like this.
Yeah, there's still people who think.
So, you know, when Florin Hilbay argues that the RH law is a gender-neutral law, it's for both men and women, because, again, the Couples for Christ wants the husband to have the right to have a vasectomy without getting approval from the wife, but the husband has the right to stop the wife from getting a ligation.
Right.
Yeah.
So this double standard just doesn't have to, it just shouldn't fly in a society where there is equal protection for both men and women. And, you know, this just leads to the other things that the Catholic Church will likely oppose. Because when things don't work out between the man and the woman, like, usually the woman would just keep quiet. If rape happens to her, she would rather not report it because, you know, that's your husband and you're in a married relationship. You have to make these things work. And it's good that recently there was that celebrity who reported rape against her husband. Was that it?
Yeah.
That was another one, because I think I was referring to the Sunshine.
Sorry.
Sunshine Cruz and
Cesar
Montano.
Sorry.
Okay, yeah, get your
Pinoy showbiz.
But anyway, like, Cesar Montano, like, was just, how is that possible for me to rape my wife? And it just repeats that same problem we had from the 1997 anti-rape law arguments.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, when it doesn't work between these two, you either force it or you let it go, and, you know, that which means divorce. And that's another law that we'll have to tackle soon enough. We already have a religious, you know, blinder when it comes to the whole divorce issue. Because Muslims can have it, Catholics cannot, because, you know, and in a way that violates the non-establishment clause of our constitution.
Depending on your religion.
Depending. And, you know, it's really a long battle that we have to fight here. And we just have to keep raising awareness about these things, I think. And, you know, all of this just leaves a bad taste in the mouth, which leads us to our next topic, which is Soylent, which I don't know if it has a bad taste in the mouth. Does it leave a bad taste in the mouth?
I haven't tasted it. Oh, by the way, just a primer, I guess, for the people.
Okay, what is Soylent?
Soylent is this new food that's being developed, and it's made from the chemicals that the human body needs. So it's not grown, it's not domesticated, it's just a bunch of chemicals put in a blender, and then you have this shake-like sludge that you drink or eat.
So it's a food substitute.
Yes, it's a food substitute, and the idea behind this is that you don't want to spend as much time preparing your food, and sometimes you don't want to think about what to eat at all. You just want to be nourished. So if that's the case, Soylent should be fine for you. Because, yeah, it's designed to have all the nutrients that you need.
And, yeah, who is this for? It's a low-cost alternative. But isn't it a low-cost alternative that's, you know, it has a more noble cause of solving hunger, world hunger?
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of donating food or money for food, maybe you just give Soylent or money for Soylent.
Mm-hmm.
And it would feed more people.
Yeah.
Right? But other than that, let's talk about how practical it would be for people like us. Like, would you try that when it comes to the when it finally becomes available sometime soon?
Definitely, I would try it because I am not exactly a food connoisseur. Most of the time I just eat to be nourished, and sometimes it becomes a hassle. I'd rather just have a shake that I
well
drink.
Privilege. Yeah. Eating is a hassle.
No, I mean, yeah, privilege.
Yeah.
But I am a bit wary of the taste because the reviews have been coming out recently, and it doesn't seem good at the moment.
Yeah, like there was this one guy who wrote a daily blog, like detailing his taking of Soylent, and day two palang, he was like, okay, I can't take this shit anymore. So like,
it wasn't even that he didn't want Soylent anymore. He felt like it ruined his stomach.
His
like
appetite.
He didn't want to eat anything ever again.
Yeah.
So that's a bit scary. But, you know,
well,
for science.
Yeah,
yeah, it's something.
Sure it takes getting used to.
Yeah, I think it's if you're a vegan or if you're used to, you know, the meat substitutes or the, you know, veggie meat and stuff like that, you'll probably not mind it as much
as
people who are omnivores and eat just everything. You know, but it's worth a try because sometimes you just do not have time to eat a full meal, and you have no access to a microwave even and a TV dinner, and all you have is that shake, and you just drink it and it's ready. But will this further make people, you know, it's another shortcut that, you know, that people take instead of doing the real thing, like instead of having a conversation on the on the phone or even face to face. You just send a short text message and then you're done.
Yeah,
you know, in the same.
Yeah. So something really gets lost in the translation, so to speak. Like, eating is a communal activity.
Yes.
So imagine if everyone just drank Soylent and just didn't pay attention to each other. So there's a lot of stuff that gets taken away when you take the act of eating meals, like real cooked meals, away. Even the act of cooking meals. Like for other people, for example, it's a big gesture.
Yeah.
So
it's not as special if like I mixed you some Soylent.
Yeah. It's sweet. I
shook some Soylent for you.
Yeah. So.
But maybe it doesn't have to be like that. Maybe you can have a communal Soylent drinking party.
Why
you know.
Not?
Yeah.
Yeah. People have drinking parties and people have could have like Soylent parties.
Well, I can imagine like people having eating parties. Like, it's a big deal if you eat something that's not Soylent. So that'll be fun.
I see. Yeah, you're right about that.
It's kind of like hot cuisine. You go out of your way to eat something.
Yeah, that's an interesting insight. Like, if you have Soylent for nourishment, then why eat? Then eating now, the real food becomes a special occasion. And if it's a special occasion, chances are you won't just cook something just so you have something.
Yeah,
you're gonna put more effort into making it look and taste good as well.
So I guess the quality of food will skyrocket.
It's very sci-fi to me.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of this thing I read where, like, to make babies, you don't need to have sex anymore. Like, and I think that's a very real possibility. Like, they've made sperm and egg cells just from other cells and without the need for actual sex to happen. We could reach that time where sex, actual physical intercourse, sexual intercourse would be a special thing.
Yeah.
And or it would just eliminate the practice altogether, which is
quite
a bit unlikely.
Yeah, but
even now, like, people are having sex recreationally.
Yeah.
Because of contraceptives. So
I think Soylent would be a big hit for the people who, you know, night shift people.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's already unhealthy, like to work like that, I think.
Yes.
And to you know, to have if they don't have to force themselves to eat right and just substitute Soylent.
Yeah.
It could like further make it worse for them.
Yeah.
So those are just some of the risks. that we will have to try out for ourselves when Soylent becomes available sometime soon. I think September or...
You ordered something,
I signed up for something.
Wasn't there a Kickstarter thing for it?
Yeah.
Like you were part of that. Okay, and we'll talk about that and have a Soylent party. But till then, thank you for tuning in. See you next time.
Bye.